This is episode 334 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, May the 30th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. With the internet being a springboard for free speech, are we becoming a negative society? Chances are, if you're the recipient of poor customer service or goods that aren't to your expectation, you've ventured onto a blog or forum to vent your dissatisfaction. With this in mind, should we, as a society, start to provide websites where customers and consumers can rate their satisfaction with an experience for all to see? Well, if in fact we are a bunch of whingers, then beware what you read online. The nation's fifth largest private health fund, NIB, has set up a website on which patients can talk about their good and their bad medical experiences. Whoa, now if that isn't a red rag to a bull, I don't know what is. Rod McKenzie is Chief Marketing Officer for NIB and said on ABC Radio that the company is trying to provide a site where consumers and their customers can come and search for a practitioner, for example, a dentist in their local area, and be able to compare the results across dentists on a number of factors, including the likelihood of their customers to recommend that provider and an average service charge score. A dentist's name, their contact details, including their name, address and phone number, will be available in association with their comments, their service charge score and their likelihood to recommend score. Controversially, it would name practitioners, and that has the profession crying foul. But if this is the sort of banter that's finding its way to social networking sites and blogs, as well as local talkback radio stations already, does it really make that much difference? Well, those to whom the not-so-nice criticism is levied at may have cause for concern. On the other hand, it may go a long way to addressing shortfalls within the sector, as well as showing up the big insurance companies for what they really are.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we keenly await the return of Dr. Ron and ask why the ABC's Spicks and Specs program finishes the same day he's in the audience. Also, Windows Phone 7 to offer multitasking. NBN Co. has called for expressions of interest from ISPs wanting to offer broadband products on the company's interim satellite service. And Paul Buchanan, PayPal's mobile strategy manager, joins us live on the panel. Adam's got a view from the couch, and we've got the usual Oddspot gadget website and app of the week. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Skype is hit by a global outage. Air crash investigators analyse the ill-fated Air France black box data recorders. The customs service intercepts illegal electronic waste bound for China. And the Australian government is encouraged to embrace the cloud. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Just 2 weeks after Skype was sold to Microsoft for $8.5 billion, the popular voice over IP network experienced a global outage last week. Users on machines running Windows, OS X and Linux all reported trouble last week after Skype distributed a software patch which made it impossible for many users to log in and make calls. Skype posted an update about the outage on its blog, saying a small number of people were experiencing problems. The solution posted by Skype involved the deletion of a solitary XML file. Skype is destined to become its own division within Microsoft as the software giant plans to integrate Skype into its Xbox Kinect games platform as well as Windows Phone 7. Investigators have released preliminary findings into the Air France Airbus disaster in 2009 after recovering and analysing the flight's black box data recorders. Recovered data reveals the pilots struggled to control the aircraft as it went into an aerodynamic stall, rolled, and plunged 38,000 feet into the Atlantic Ocean in just 3.5 minutes. The preliminary report is consistent with comments made in June 2009 on Tech Talk Radio by aviation expert and retired Qantas pilot Mark Mayer.
For them not to get a radio call out is the really worrying thing for me, because if they didn't, that means something catastrophic and very quick. And that kind of means that, to me as a pilot, that maybe a huge pitch up or a huge pitch down or a huge roll where you become virtually incapacitated because the G-forces be able to do much other than wrestle with the aeroplane. And when those G-forces happen, wings break off, tailplanes break off, and then you're a falling piece of metal.
The plane's external speed sensors, called pitot tubes, have come under intense scrutiny as having possibly contributed to the disaster. The BEA investigation has found that two sets of instruments gave different speed readings at one point in time. Mark Mayer again.
The speed sensors aboard the aircraft may have malfunctioned. This is a problem that they've known about. And the sensors aboard the flight hadn't been replaced, but that was only a recommendation for Airbus. And it's important to stress that this information only represents one part of it. And this was a recommendation, not a safety critical requirement. And it would be dangerous, really, to draw a conclusion that that was the actual problem. But again, it may have been a contributor.
The Air France Airbus 330 plunged into the North Atlantic Ocean on the 1st of June 2009, killing all 228 passengers and crew on board. It has taken investigators nearly 2 years to locate and recover the black box flight recorders. The ABC reports that the Australian Customs Service has intercepted 4 shipments this year of illegal electronic waste intended for export overseas. The shipments have included old computers, mobile telephones, DVD players, televisions, and other items that contain deadly chemicals. The PM program's Jeff Waters says that while Australia is starting to groan under the weight of a growing amount of electronic waste, a large quantity is apparently being smuggled illegally out of the country. The Australian Green Senator, Mr. Scott Ludlam, told the ABC he wants to know more details.
I think most Australians support the fact that we don't want to be dumping our discarded phones and computers on villages in other countries in our region. I suspect what customers have uncovered here is the tip of a very serious iceberg.
Industry insiders say the illegal export industry is thriving and that the export of illegal products doesn't appear to be adequately policed. Only about 5% of electronic waste is properly recycled here in Australia. The remaining e-waste is shipped overseas to legal recycling facilities or ends up in landfill. In 2009, the Sydney Morning Herald reported that 12 ships carrying e-waste had been intercepted leaving Australia for Asian ports since the start of 2008 without hazardous materials permits. A report prepared in 2008 by the Total Environment Centre revealed that about 37 million computers had been buried in landfill around Australia, along with 17 million televisions and 56 million mobile phones. Toxic materials inside common consumer electronics include mercury, lead, arsenic, bromide, beryllium and cadmium. And a task force on cloud computing says the Australian government should make the switch to online applications and data storage. The long-awaited Cloud Computing Strategic Direction paper was compiled by the Federal Finance Department and recommends steps to promote the widespread adoption of cloud services. Chairman of Electronic Frontiers Australia, Mr. Colin Jacobs, says improving customer protection of data is important, but the potential legislative changes by the Gillard government shouldn't stifle innovation.
We're in favour of a principles-based legislation that requires companies to make best efforts to look after user privacy in various areas, but doesn't mandate specific technological solutions. You know, we're often focusing on the privacy impacts of these new technologies, for instance, what can happen if there's a breach, what can happen if there's a leak. Those are all legitimate concerns, but there's massive benefits as well. And we can't end up in a situation where the law is stifling innovation.
A number of small pilot cloud projects are already underway in some government agencies, including the Australian Taxation Office, the Australian Bureau of Statistics, and the Immigration Department. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
We've banished Ron for banging on the desks and making noises during
the
show.
He did a lot of the banging last week.
Hello.
Hello.
Time to talk about vicious birds.
The angriest of angry birds.
Let's throw these birds at pigs. I'll love it.
Everything in Nokia land was geared to Symbian.
I have a policy of not telling people who are preparing my food that they're idiots.
Right. And if you believe that, you believe anything.
And you deserve a Mac.
And no one will know it's a 1975 one.
Often they'll prepackage Office for you as well.
Yeah, but you're just a hater.
I'm not a hater. I use Microsoft products.
Sorry, visual graphics here in the studio.
Don't work in the studio.
No, this is radio, Graham.
Did he just say there's better things to do than gaming? Did I hear that right?
Oh, he didn't tell me you were clinically insane.
Yes, starting off really well, isn't it?
That in post.
Well, see, you know.
I will, don't you worry.
Whilst we're here, Windows Mobile 6.
Would you like to get a word in edgeways?
Yeah.
I love it. I would stroke it while I was in bed if I could.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Have you ever regretted something and had it played back to you in the best of the show? Lena's cringing in the corner of the studio. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. You should see what we can see. A grown woman bent over, cringing, fingers in her ears in the corner. Something about stroking something. I don't know what that was all about.
Rocking backwards and forwards. I'm not here. Yeah, exactly. La, la, la. Yeah. What happened? I wasn't here for a week and the place has turned to caca.
Didn't you? Well, you went and ruined an ABC television program, so you thought we could have a go ourselves, you know?
That's right. Thanks for having me back, by the way.
Oh, look, anytime.
I'll do my worst here now this week, too.
Anytime. Welcome to the show. Hi, Graham. You haven't heard from you yet this evening.
Hello, Andrew. I'm still stunned by the things that... I don't remember saying some of that stuff last week.
I know. It comes back to you and it's like, did I really say that? Anyway. Lena.
Sure does.
Lena is on the end of the panel. Dr. Ron's in the middle.
Hello.
Dr. Graham on the other end. So, but everyone's here this evening. We've got a couch tonight. Lena's going to tell us a bit about computers. We've got a guest coming in. We're going to be hearing from Paul very shortly.
And the chat room's gone bananas. Everyone's changed their name to someone else's name. It's very difficult to know who's who.
I'm on Google at the moment, really.
You're already logged in. There's Andrew, the way you normally log in. Someone's already logged in.
It's not me.
I don't know who I am anymore. Who's who?
You wanted to be you before.
I know.
But you couldn't go back to being you.
I think I'm back to me now.
Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we all are if you are listening live.
I've gone back to being me just to save on confusion.
Yep.
Anyway, Paul Buchanan will be joining us later. He's from PayPal.
Oh, cool.
We're going to be talking about these new RF thingies. You know, the wallet, the electronic wallet that we have now in our phone? Or about to.
Yeah, we don't have it yet.
No, but we will soon. If Apple has their way, if PayPal has their way, and all sorts of other things.
Very soon we'll have these credit cards that we can just wave vaguely near the checkout thing.
Yeah, correct. Correct. And we're going to find out a little bit about the security behind those things and where they're going to go.
Okay.
Because it's a very interesting time what you'll be able to do with your mobile phone. Who ever thought that...
So we're going to be able to use the mobile phone as if it was one of those credit cards,
yep,
are we?
When you have your electronic wallet will be your mobile phone. Very shortly you will not need to carry cash. Haven't we heard this before?
I've been hearing this for a long time, but I'll be looking forward to hearing what PayPal's got to say about the matter, what Paul Buchanan's got to say.
I heard something a few years ago about a paperless office too, and that doesn't...
Well, that's the biggest furphy since...
Speaking of which, have you got a copy of the rundown there?
No, I don't print them anymore because you never use them.
Oh, okay.
There were two on the bench there before. What did you do with them? Anyway.
I've got one.
Co-presenters hijacked them all.
I'm all right, Jack. There you go. That's all right. Have you got an Oddspot gadget and website of the week? Because I didn't see it on the spreadsheet there, Dr. Ron.
Oh, no. Oh, I forgot about that. No, I've got everything. I've got everything. I just forgot to update the spreadsheet.
Even some Cairo. We've made up for 2 weeks. So Lena and Graham and I, we're heading off to the coffee shop while Ron does the Cairo.
Yay.
First half of the show will be correspondence.
Absolutely.
You didn't read any out last week. Oh, you did. You read a little bit out last week. But not too much. Hey, it was a good show, by the way. Very entertaining.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. And it was good to hear Adam on as well. Sorry I missed him live.
Oh. Yeah, he was good. Good. Yeah, there was some rivalry, east-west rivalry in the studio.
East versus west antagonism. That was quite funny.
I was in Sydney yesterday.
No, it wasn't funny at all.
Well, it was from this side of the podcast, anyway.
You missed the Turkish Delight.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. Turkish Delight
was delightful, yes.
Aha! I see what you did there.
Thank you.
Turkish Delight was delightful.
He's a wordsmith.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I was in Sydney, and I couldn't get any north-south rivalry, so I had to come into the studio and get some east-west rivalry.
What are we doing in Sydney?
Oh, never you mind.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well,
actually...
You brought it up.
I was trying out the Wi-Fi on the Sydney ferries.
Oh, yeah?
Did it work? Just for fun?
No, it didn't work. Well, just for fun. I've come to the conclusion that mobile broadband is much better in Melbourne than it is in Sydney. Maybe I was just in the wrong spots, but I was roaming on Edge quite a bit thanks to Telstra in the CBD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, instead of 3G, which was, yeah. And cruising the ferries in the harbour as you do, it wasn't sort of what I'd expect, but it worked.
Sydney is a very different layout to Melbourne, isn't it? Melbourne's
flat. Topographically, yes.
Yeah, Melbourne's flat and Sydney just isn't.
I guess it's got something like that to do with it. But anyway, they have there's a thing on in Sydney which is on for the next little bit called Vivid, which is where they do really great things in circular key. They shine patterns onto the Sydney Opera House and they light up the AMP building and a few other of those massive buildings with different colours in circular key. And, of course, you get all these great different light shows around the harbour.
How do they do that with lasers or LEDs?
No, big projectors. It was very creative. Okay. Very creative.
Lasers.
I was actually... funny the people you bump into when you're just mulling around there. I was going to say mulling around it in circular key. It was dark, pitch dark. We just plonked ourselves down, as you do, to watch these shows, and there was a guy next to us. I didn't really think twice until the girls knocked his tripod, and he introduced himself, and he was one of these scientists who works for Canon, developing cameras.
Oh.
So that was, we hit it off after that. That was
okay.
Great. Hi, Jeff, if you're listening. Probably not, but it was good. That was my Sydney trip.
Very good. You sent me a glimpse while you were there.
Yeah, and you sent me abuse from the other end saying, go faster. Yeah.
I saw
a barrier. They don't go very far.
It was quite funny because I looked at the map and I saw the straight snail's trail across the bay.
The harbour.
The harbour. Come on, the harbour. The harbour. Well, you're on a ferry, obviously.
Yes, we were.
I hope you're on a ferry.
It was good fun going across the heads because the swell gives the ferry a left-right momentum,
I love that.
It was absolutely classic. It was like being on a bucking horse, you know? Ooh. Yeah, good fun.
Did the girls enjoy it, young daughters?
Absolutely. Yep. I think we all enjoyed it. It was good fun. Stayed at a good pub opposite the park. Hyde Park's a wonderful thing. I lived in Sydney for 2 years. I never went to Hyde Park or some of the places I went to. It's great being a tourist.
You worked for a television network up there for some time, didn't you?
Yes,
enough
exactly.
Said.
Anyway.
Is that where you got your projectionist's license?
No. I did that at RMIT here in Melbourne. Gee, you got a good memory, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
No, I can 16 mil carbon arc. Never used it.
Never used it?
Yeah. Bang the rocks together, as they say.
I've got
wind
a couple
the rods
of those,
in, and it arcs. It's good.
Cool.
As opposed to those people who say ask, it's arcs.
No, it's not.
They're arcs,
A-R-C-S. They are arcs.
Carbon arcs.
As opposed to A-S-K-S.
Yes.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Arcs.
Dr. Ronnie has some correspondence from Adobe.
TD. Via the Tech Talk Radio feedback form says, hi all, g'day TD. After listening to a recent discussion on Tech Talk Radio about Dr. Ron's dilemma with the version of IE used, IE6, which is not supported on YouTube, or the Tech Talk homepage for that matter, says TD, Dr. Ron, you should...
Deliberately.
I get an abusive message when I go to Tech Talk Radio homepage from...
Especially for you. Our listeners could go and log on.
Full-time job number one.
Yeah.
It tries to redirect to a page to an error message that isn't there, I think, and then gives you an even stranger error message.
It says, this is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music.
Yeah.
Dr. Ron, you should be working for a more innovative department, like mine, says TD.
His? What's his?
Who is living on the edge, or the department is living on the edge, running IE7.
Whoa.
I know it's a bit out there, but hey, live dangerously. I share your incredulity of the mindset of those determining what version of IE is, quote, safe to use. However, it is a small price to pay to serve the taxpayers of this state. As it was once said, don't get mad, get even. A USB drive and portable apps may be the solution. Long-time listener, irregular forum contributor, and avid TTR fan, TD.
Thanks, TD.
Gets 10 points from me for saying incredulity.
I don't think we've had the word incredulity used in correspondence before.
I haven't heard of
that surprises me, actually.
Is that the penultimate use of incredulity?
Andrew.
No. It's
new word of the week, please.
Regular Tech Talk contributor GJMCN via the feedback form says...
This could be lengthy.
I've edited GJ's contribution, and we'll hear a bit more from him next week.
Down to a page.
He says, hello, dearies, Kenny Everett style.
Dearies.
A couple of things. I kind of support the digital set-top box plan, and I kind of don't agree with your Skype views, and I kind of like my iPhone, though time will tell.
Commit. Stop saying kind of. Commit.
Commit, GJ. GJ says he listened to two podcasts, one in the US and another in the UK, not ours, others. The pundits are scratching their heads as to why the Microsoft acquisition of Skype took place.
We sort of are too.
in Windows Weekly.
Linda reckons it's for them to stay relevant. Lena. Yes.
Lena does.
Not sorry. Linda.
Sorry, that's Freudian slip there. Lena yes. says.
We'll explore that in the break a bit further. In Windows Weekly Ep 208, which is a Twit TV podcast, apparently the strategy was no one else wants this dog, so let's overpay to get it.
Ooh.
Lena wouldn't know what Skype was.
Microsoft paid $14.70. Your wife rang me during the week. She handbag called me.
I heard more than a handbag call at the other end of this conversation. We'll talk about that in the break too.
Wets.
Yes.
Wets. Microsoft paid $14.70 for each Skype. I haven't got a handbag. Is that what you're insinuating?
Oh, God. Give me the paper.
Sorry, GJ. We'll get this out in a minute.
Well, I just take offence to Andrew saying I got a handbag. No, Lena doesn't want to read it. Microsoft paid $14.70 for each Skype user, most of whom pay nothing to use the service. This purchase represents just 116 days cash flow for Microsoft.
You're saying on the thing you've got a man bag.
Meaning, yes, they can very easily afford this. Also, this podcast, Guardians Tech Weekly, which is the UK one, Microsoft by Skype. GJ says, this UK podcast argues uncertainty as well, but does dampen the Xbox scenario that you guys suggested. They also argue it would be a technical nightmare to put it across all MS products.
Mm.
So, GJ's 2 cents worth. We'll be hearing more from him next week. Thank you for the contribution, GJ. And last but not least, TARDIS, who is in the chat room tonight.
Heard from TARDIS for ages.
No, TARDIS keeps in touch. He's a good egg. On the official Tech Talk forum, he says in a thread called Favorite Android Apps, thanks for the suggestion of TuneIn Radio.
Ah, that's on iOS as well.
That was great. Correct. I've got that on my Android as we speak.
Mm.
TARDIS says, I found it in the Apple App Store as well. I installed it on my iPhone. It's awesome. So as Lena says and as TARDIS says.
And it's free.
It's now available for iPhones as well as Android devices, and it is free.
And it's good. Very good.
It's really good. So what it does is lets you live stream any radio station in your area over the data network.
Well, not in your area for that matter.
Or not in your area. Yeah. That's right.
Mm. I love how quick it is.
Sorry?
I love how quick it is.
It is good.
Straight away.
You dial it up and it says, do you want something local? And then it offers you all the local stations served up to you in just press the button. And you start listening straight
up. You could listen to fine community radio stations like, for example, to pick an example at completely at random, 3WBC in Melbourne, anywhere over the world over this.
FM. Correct.
You can.
Nice.
Fantastic.
It's pretty good. So have a look at that one, TuneIn Radio. That's our correspondence for this week, Andrew. And if you'd like to communicate with us, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Georgia in our chat room says she's using TuneIn Radio as we speak to listen to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio.
And so does Gareth and so does TARDIS.
Oh, there you go. Listening to Tech Talk Radio now, says Gareth and TARDIS.
I used it when I was sick, when I missed an episode, and I was listening to it on my phone, on my deathbed.
Yeah, plug your headphones in. Off it goes.
Yep.
Were you listening live or were you listening delayed?
Live on TuneIn Radio.
Okay, excellent.
It was good.
All right, to news that occurred this week. Firstly, Vodafone takes infinite plans prepaid with all time. They're going to do some more wordsmithing and infer things again, which I thought was, you know, typically Vodafone sort of things to do. That's what happens when you got to try and get every bit of market share you possibly can.
So the last advertising campaign we heard that you could use
infinite.
Use your Vodafone on a Vodafone plan for an infinite number of minutes in a finite time period.
Correct. Well, this week's word from Vodafone is all time.
All time.
All time.
In what context?
Well, Vodafone has announced a range of all-you-can-eat prepaid mobile plans that mirrors its infinite contract plans. Vodafone branded the new plans all time after having faced legal action for its infinite branding last year.
Yes. Thesaurus.
The mobile operator's infinite plans drew the ire of Competition Optus in December after the Singtel-owned telco was taken to court by the Australian Competition Watchdog for advertising its unlimited plans in a misleading way.
Yes.
Anyway, just to cut to the chase on this one, here's some definitions which was prepared earlier as I hold the two pieces of paper together, try and join them together. These are the catches. Infinite standard calls, but not in peak hours on the $35 plan, only between 7 p.m. and 9 a.m. on weekdays.
Oh.
That's very finite.
It is very finite. No international calls, no video calls, no directory assistance calls, no 13, 1500, 1800 numbers, no voicemail retrieval, and no rerouted calls. So that's the limit of infinite calls. Sorry, you have to laugh, don't you?
It is ridiculous.
Yeah. If you don't, you'll cry.
Now, does someone want to have a go at this? In fact, we should put a prize up. If someone can tell us what infinite text messages means.
Oh.
We should get a computer to send as many text messages as we possibly can in a month and then go to Vodafone and say, well, we're only able to send 8.5 million. That's a long way short of infinite.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I want our money back.
I reckon they'd be ringing you up or disconnecting you before you even got to the millionth one, maybe even the 100,000th one. This is where my paper fold is. Infinite text messages. Ouch. Only to domestic personal users. No international text. Premium texts rerouted or messages sent to the Pivotel network, whoever or whatever the Pivotel network is. Mm. The other one was infinite access to social networking sites. Anyone have a go at this one?
You can use Twitter and Facebook for one status update per day.
Oh, well, probably. Here it is. Only if your phone supports them.
that's fair enough.
You'll be charged extra for data consumption if you follow an external link off the social networking site.
This makes me a little bit angry, this and Vodafone, and they're not the only culprit. I saw an advertisement today for an Optus plan, and it had free or unlimited access or unrestricted access or something to Facebook and Twitter. And I thought, well, if I'm buying a data plan, I don't want restricted access to anything. I want unrestricted to everything. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're making it sound like it's a bonus and they're giving you something and they're being good guys for not restricting you.
What they mean in that case is unmetered access to Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is.
I think that's what they meant, but it was just confusing and misleading. It was stupid terminology, and I thought...
See, Telstra did this a while back.
Unlimited SMS asterisk. There you are on the Optus page.
I'm looking at the Optus page at the moment. The reason I'm looking at the Optus page is because I'm trying to find something that annoyed me that I saw on the TV that said something about calls to Australian GSM mobiles.
Ah, yes.
Now, how are you going to know whether the person you're calling is on a GSM mobile or not?
Or a wideband CDMA phone. Or,
yeah, exactly.
Which most 3G phones are wideband CDMA. Well,
yeah, all 3G are, yes. So how do you know whether you're calling someone who you're going to get the benefit of this plan or not?
The word misleading and deceiving, or there are two words actually, come to mind, and I guess that's what the watchdog is after. And of course, nothing like a red rag to a bull with telephone networks that are trying to get as much market share as they can, because the incumbent is coming in like a steam train and just collecting everybody along the way.
Vodafone's had a bit of bad press lately, so they're trying really hard to sound like good people. And they're also bringing over Lady Gaga for Vodafone customers or something. Oh. Some one-off.
Didn't she do something in the middle of the week which caused an internet meltdown or something?
Most likely.
Yes, most likely. Should we leave it there?
Smoked Salmon in our chat room says he wants unlimited MySpace and Napster and Atari. Yeah, that's what we need. Unlimited Napster.
I remember
all
Napster.
Three of those no longer exist, correct?
Yeah, yes. Well, Atari's around in some form or another. Not the console, but the people.
Atari.
Speaking of wanting to stay relevant, MySpace, I think, still around. There might be one person with an account still there.
MySpace.
Musicians use it a lot still.
Yeah, MySpace. On MySpace, yeah.
Is that the musician's choice for email and stuff, isn't it?
For social networking, yeah. So if you're if you're a band or you're a musician or whatever, you're doing gigs, you'll have a MySpace page and have all the stuff up there and have all your music up there and stuff.
That's great, because when the page in MySpace page loads, you can have it automatically play music and you can embed two or three or four different audio players.
That's what it is.
And then it just plays three or four things simultaneously when you load it up. It's really good.
Great at 3 a.m. or 2 p.m, or if you load it up at work and the boss is around.
There is a solution to that, actually, Dr. Run, to stop that happening. What you do is you edit your host file and you put in myspace.com and your 127.0.0.1 is the address. And it never happens again.
So you never actually get to the MySpace page.
I would play Nerd Alert there, but I won't. Using IP addresses on the radio like that. That's very... Yes. Anyway, Graham, moving on.
Moving on.
Can we talk about something a little bit more serious today? I was driving to work and I was listening to John Fain on ABC Radio here in Melbourne, which is 774.
Yes. ABC local radio.
He has a fairly sort of, I don't know, shock jock is the wrong word. He's not that.
He's a terrier.
Yes, you could. That's a very good word. Yes, he is.
He's a very tame one if he is.
I wouldn't want to be on the bad side of him.
This morning he was talking to the parents of a young boy who lost his life to cyberbullying.
Yes, I've heard about the story. I'll stop being flippant now.
This was approximately 2 years ago. He decided that he copped, and I found this absolutely amazing, and I think he, as in John Fain, as well as I'd say most of the people around town who were listening to him were in tears when they heard this story, a very emotional story. Ali and Dina Halkick lost their son, Alan, to suicide back in 2009, where he chose to end his life by jumping off the Westgate Bridge here in Melbourne, being tormented and taken to task by a person who has been before the court, so it's all done and dusted. The verdicts have been found and all that, so I guess is why we can all talk about it in the media these days. But I guess it was just one of those moving moments where it makes all parents stop and think about what their kids are doing on cyberspace and how they should be watched and how you can try and encourage them to talk to you and not take it all in their bedrooms and, you know, not sleep about it and do things like that.
Which is very difficult for you know, a young man of that age, 17, to share with his parents. It's the last thing he wants to do, really.
Absolutely. But the thing which I was keen to talk about in this instance was the fact that for the first time, I think a little bit of legal precedence has been created here in Melbourne, where if someone comes at you with a blunt instrument, sharp instrument, whatever, and tries to attack you, then there is grounds for the police to act and charge people and say, well, this is what happened. But if someone does this with words in social networking sites, up until today in Victoria, this wasn't the case. You couldn't actually do much about it. But now it looks like that we are in a position where for those who are the subject of bullying in a vicious, callous and nasty way, this poor boy had over 300 emails sent to him, which was just what pushed him over the edge.
Mm. Jesus.
And it was just such a sad story. But the moral of the story, I didn't want to really harp on it, but go and if you're a parent, just check with your kids. Keep an eye on what they're doing. Mm. There's some great things. Befriend them in Facebook. You know, get them to be, you know, it might sound a bit daggy and a bit, you know, mum and dad are my friends. But let me say, if it stops this, it's got to be good. The other thing too, mums and dads, give your kids' email addresses, which forward to you. So any email that comes in, then potentially you're going to end up with it in your box. And be open and honest with them and discuss with them what's going on and why you want to do it. Keep the channels of communications open is really where it comes from.
If they suddenly change and become really quiet and introverted and are upset, you know, don't stop till you find out why.
Yeah. Mm. Dina, who was Alan's mum, basically said she didn't blame the internet. The internet is just a conduit. It's just a method of communications.
Yeah.
But this is just a product of this new method of communications that we have to be aware of.
Because if you get bullied at school, home's your refuge from that. But when it's social networking or it's on your computer and everything, it's everywhere you go. You can't get away from it. People say just turn the computer off, but that's a bit short-sighted.
Well, it's not that easy because as they were saying on the radio this morning, you can turn the computer off, but you go to school and it continues and your friends tell you what's going on.
It's constant.
It is constant, and it's not as simple as turning off the computer as was discussed. But anyway, I'd recommend everyone visit abc.net.au/Melbourne, and there is a link on the ABC site to have a listen. 15 minutes of the most powerful radio you're likely to hear in a long time. So
I think you tweeted it while it was going to air. You said every parent should be listening to this. Or
it was down the track once they put the page up. But yes, have a look in the Tech Talk tweets.
I dare say Dr. Run will put a link to it in the show notes.
I shall do that.
And just to clarify exactly what it was that happened today, it was the Victorian Victims of Crime Assistance Tribunal that ruled that the young man's death was as a result of violence and therefore the family were entitled to crimes compensation. So that was the technical detail of what the ruling meant today.
Well, it's good, so and it should be.
Exactly, I agree totally. Yeah.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with more, hopefully, in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If
if you're using satellite for your internet, you've got a very long lag time.
How does $3,005 grab you?
Whoa!
They'd probably get rid of the step-up, step-down transformer issue and waste it.
So this has got a whack of zero. This
correct.
Control.
I don't have shares in them. It's not a political statement. It's just a lot of fun.
Qantas are wanting to clarify.
Ironet have just assimilated Netspace into the Borg.
Entertaining.
Graham, the name of the volcano was...
It's unpronounceable.
Informative.
Oh, look, hang on. On the back it says iPad.
Independent.
You tweeted it.
Me? Don't point at me in that tone of voice.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
This is never going to get off the ground.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, you are indeed. Welcome back to everybody to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Graham playing with his microphone. Is it balancing okay?
Excellent. Yeah, it's about to fall off.
Dr. Ron and Lena Van Deventer in this evening, talking all sorts of fun things. Anyway, we're going to talk about PayPal now and transactions. Dr. Ron, have you got one of those magic cards in your pocket where you go to your local supermarket? Because I think Safeway's now using these near-field thingies.
I've only just got a chip and pin card. That's the
chip
level,
and pin card.
That's the level of technology that I'm up with.
Oh.
I had just a magnetic stripey one up until only a few months ago, and now I've
really?
Got a chip in my card.
Well, that's good. And has it got the word PayPass written on
it? No, it doesn't. Now you're telling me there's more technology I've got to get up to speed with.
Well, you know, yes.
I have got one of those loopy things in my passport, though.
Oh, have you?
Is it that sort of technology?
Yeah, I guess it is, where you go and they've got things embedded in your passport and you stand there on the feet thing and you look directly into the camera and it says, I think it really is you.
But my passport's got a page with a little chip and a coil.
You shouldn't wash them, did
wire.
You know?
Yeah.
They don't go through the washing machine.
Not designed
well.
To be washed in washing machines.
No. Anyway, look, it's the state of things to come. So when we had the opportunity to have a chat to Paul Buchanan, who just so happens to be PayPal's mobile strategy manager. Hopefully I got that right. Did I get that right, Paul?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We couldn't resist it. Now, just to put everyone into the picture, we've all heard of PayPal. PayPal has been a dominant player in the online payment industry and has built around about $3.4 billion, US billion dollar, that is, industry from 2006 to 2010. The company works with 57 financial networks and over 15,000 banks worldwide, and I'd go to most people that probably have a PayPal account purely because, well, personally speaking, I like the ability that I don't have to give out my digits. It's just my email address that does it all for me. So I think that's one of the better things. So, Paul, where's PayPal at the moment when it comes to this wonderful new technology, this new near-field stuff, and what have you got planned?
Well, firstly, we're focusing on mobile in general, which we call M-commerce or mobile commerce, which I guess is just that natural extension of from the computer and PCs and online, now moving into the mobile space. So that's, I guess, the key focus right now. But very quickly behind that is what's called NFC or near-field communications, which you were talking a little bit about it before.
This is what we see in the retail shops where you just wave your card, no PIN number required. And it's for a purchase under $100 or something normally, isn't it?
Well, that's a component of it. So basically it's near-field communication, so the ability for devices to talk to each other if they're in a close proximity. Now, that's not just necessarily payments, but obviously payments is a big part of it. It could be something like using it to start your car. So instead of having a key, you could have an NFC device that if you're close enough and they can talk to each other, you can actually start your car with it.
Wow, that's impressive, isn't it?
So, yeah, payments is just a part of it. And where I find it really interesting is not so much just tapping a bit of plastic on a point-of-sale item. It's really when that's embedded into the mobile phone that it starts to really become powerful, because you've got all these amazing things that the phone can do right now, like it's got a GPS navigation device, it's got your camera within your phone as well. So you can start to leverage all the capabilities of the phone and come up with some fantastic applications or ways to interact with businesses.
Well, I guess since 2009, mobile payments have been growing the fastest in Australia than anywhere else in the world. And yeah. They seem to be on the rise. I think, my personal opinion would be due to the adaptation of, you know, Australians just love these sort of gadgets. But is Australia indicative of the world? Is it growing in the same rate around the rest of the world, or is it just here in Australia?
No, in fact, Australia's right at the top of the wave, really. It's rocketing along. The volumes of payments that have gone through PayPal's business on mobile has increased about 14-fold in the last year. So it's just growing at an astounding rate. And that is because of our natural adoption of technologies. Once we're confident with the technology, Australians tend to really embrace it. And in fact, I think we're third in the world for smartphone penetration. There's Korea, Japan, and then Australia as far as percentage of people in the country that own a smartphone. So, yeah, we're right up there with our love of technology.
So this is the new form of wallet, the electronic wallet we're going to have. How safe is it going to be? I know it took a lot of time for some Australians to actually venture into an ATM card and start taking, you know, putting a PIN number in a hole in the wall. So how safe is it, and how do you think the take-up's going to... Well, obviously, take-up's going to be good, isn't it? But how safe is it, Paul?
Well, security is, I guess, a key pillar of PayPal's business, and it's a concern for all of us, both online and then moving into mobile as well. The way PayPal has built its business is that nothing's actually stored or shared with a merchant or stored on your phone either. So the way PayPal operates is that you, the customer, have a relationship with PayPal. PayPal has a relationship with the merchant, but neither the twain meet as far as the customer and merchant. So your credit card details are never shared, or your financial details are never shared with the merchant. And basically the way we do that is that term, the cloud, the digital cloud, or the cloud in the sky. So you're essentially sending your information to PayPal, who manages that. And then we, through our fraud management and security measures, keep that to ourselves but allow the payment to go through. So in fact, your phone, in a financial sense, is safer than you losing your wallet, because there's no financial data that's actually ever stored on your phone with regard to PayPal. So I'd actually argue that it's worse to lose your wallet with cash and cards in it than it is to use your mobile.
So how does that work? You say that I understand there's no data stored on the phone, but the phone itself can be used to make purchases. Is that right? You wave your phone near the device and you can spend money.
Yeah.
So what stops someone nicking your phone and then using your phone to buy things?
Well, the critical thing is your password. So that's the thing you should never share. So if you've got your password, don't share it with anyone. By entering your name, which could either actually be your mobile number or your email address, then your password, you get access into your account and your account only.
So you have to key a number into your phone before you wave it near the thing in the shop. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, not just even wave it near the thing in the shop. It's also just by using your phone to surf the internet online.
Okay.
You can make your purchases from a mobile website. You can find an item, and as long as it's that website is PayPal enabled, you can click the Pay with PayPal button. The next step you'll be asked for is your password. You enter your password, and then we'll give you a summary of the item you're about to buy, and maybe the shipping details in there as well. And then you confirm your payment.
Yep.
And then that's closed, basically, there.
And this is the same way we're used to using PayPal on our computers.
Exactly right. Yeah. There's no difference really there at all.
Okay.
It's just that we've moved that technology onto the phone. And then with NFC, or near-field communication, it's that same technology, but instead of it using the phone networks or the carrier networks, you're now using a very close proximity area to communicate with. So it's really, I guess PayPal is very agnostic in that sense. It uses the technology at hand and maintains its usual, I guess, business processes of security and hopefully and or definitely ease of use as well.
We're talking with Paul Buchanan, who is the mobile strategy manager for PayPal. Paul, just briefly, you mentioned earlier GPS type sort of technology and using location based devices. How would PayPal and this type of payment work in GPS related situations?
Yeah, well, this is where it gets here. I mean, this is happening right now too, where you can use the camera capabilities of your phone to scan a barcode in a store, which will give you information about that item, but at the same time, GPS can tell you where you are, and potentially then tell you where that same item is for sale, potentially for a little bit cheaper around the corner as well, or maybe a bit cheaper being sold on eBay. So you're kind of using different applications or technologies within the phone to really give the shopper some amazing bits of information.
All right, so there's a lot of this new technology coming out. I guess I was even reading in the paper today that FPOS are looking into the near-field communication side of things, and I guess Google's been in the press and PayPal versus Google at the moment too. Where does PayPal differ from what a lot of the others have on offer, Paul?
In many ways. I think PayPal's been at this for quite some time now, over 12 years, obviously evolving from online and into new technologies. And it's developed its fraud models, its securities, it works a lot on ease of payment. So I guess the key one there would be a dozen years of experience. And then also the other part of it is we're technology agnostic. So you can use your iPhone to purchase things with. You can use an Android phone. So there's different ways for you to access and use PayPal. So I guess our goal is to sit over as a layer, so that the customer can choose whether to align your payment system with your credit card or your bank account or some funds within PayPal itself. So I guess the critical thing for PayPal is to stay obviously as buoyant as possible and as agnostic within all the ever-changing amounts of technology that goes on. So you won't necessarily see PayPal aligned to one technology. You'll see PayPal across a lot of technologies.
Paul, from a merchant's point of view, look, people are often critical of PayPal because of the charges involved from the seller's point of view. I think traditionally PayPal charges like a percentage of the sale as a fee rather than like a flat rate. But from a merchant's point of view, how is this going to differ from the existing payment structure that PayPal has, or is it going to be a bit different?
The model will stay exactly the same, and the percentage that you're talking about is in line with, I guess, standard charges for cards and things. And what it does is it enables, smaller merchants to start businesses up online or on the phone, on mobile, without having to open payment gateways and deal with lots of different banks. And there's many other charges that are involved there as well. So PayPal, yes, does charge a couple of percent, and those percentages are displayed from the website. But we believe that there's a lot of value in those percentages that the merchants are paying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, from the buyer's point of view, it's great because it's another payment option that they have. So is there information available to people who might be prospective PayPal merchants that aren't at the moment?
Oh, absolutely. Again, I direct them to paypal.com.au. There's a lot of information there about mobile, but also just setting up a very basic store. If you're setting up an online business, go to paypal.com.au and there'll be some key information there. And there's also phone numbers to call too if you get a little stuck on setting yourself up. But it's actually very, very user-friendly. It's one of the key principles, again, with PayPal is to make it developer-friendly and merchant-friendly as well, so that it's not too tech-heavy at the same time. We kind of manage all the tricky stuff in the background, I guess you could say.
Paul, looking at the new devices coming out, obviously it needs to have an NFC component in there, or else you're using, as you sort of said, the scanning barcode type sort of application. Is there an app to download on the different types of platforms, or how are we going to get started using the new PayPal purchasing technology?
Well, you really there's two ways. Either the merchant themselves will embed it within their stores, and then as new technologies involved will be there already. So if I guess at the moment you've got just a very small couple of handsets that are out there. The Nexus S has got NFC capabilities. There's talk that the iPhone 5 may do or may not. PayPal will sit either within the devices if possible, or it will sit in the cloud or within the networks as well. So we'll sort of manage that access points to the best of the technology that's allowed. So it'll really be the same way in that if you're using your phone to access payments, and the merchants agreed with it, then PayPal will present itself as an option for you to pay with.
All right, so we're really starting...
I guess in answer to your question, there's not much the customer really needs to do. Although they can download the PayPal app, which we also have available, which allows you to send money and bump money to friends as well, and just sort of manage your money in that digital wallet sense.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how quickly it takes off, I think, too, because I think in the store we're all very much creatures of habit, and online we're all creatures of habit.
I don't expect it to take off like wildfire, to be honest. I think it's going to be – it'll take some time because people are very comfortable using, their plastic cards and things right now. It's really when it becomes more convenient and they can use it for more than just, a simple, I guess, a dumb payment, you could call it, when you start to get more information and things. Also, loyalty cards and voucher systems and coupons start to come into play too. So you could walk into a large supermarket or a shopping mall and say, I want to shop for some shoes, and you'll be presented with, say, the five different shoe stores that are in that shopping mall. One might be offering 25% off today. So all those kind of nice marketing things start to wrap themselves around the technology as well. And that's where it starts to become a lot of fun.
A couple of purely practical things. I mean, it seems like a sensible thing, and as you say, it is going to take time to build confidence, but that happened with PayPal originally on the web, and it was one of the things that helped build consumer confidence.
Too right, I use it all the time now.
Yeah, in dealing online. With merchants that we'd never heard of before, we could give our details to PayPal and get some confidence in the transaction that way.
Sure.
So it's going to be good in the mobile way.
Yeah, it's a matter of trust. You've got to build that trust.
That's exactly right.
But
as a practical, just one practical thing I noticed, and I'm sure it's probably not quite your area, but I'm going to mention it anyway. I did have to deal with buying something not all that long ago from a computer supplier who didn't have credit card processing facilities and said, just send me the money on PayPal, which I did while I was standing in his shop. If you go to www.paypal.com on your mobile device, it doesn't automatically redirect to the mobile PayPal site. You have to go to m.paypal.com or mobile.paypal.com to get the mobile version of the website. So I had to struggle with I because I didn't realize the mobile version was there. I struggled with the full-blown website on my little tiny phone screen. Why can't the website detect that I'm using a handheld device and redirect me automatically to the mobile site, like Google and a lot of other websites do?
We're actually in the process of doing it now, optimizing for mobile. Unfortunately, it isn't ready today. It's a matter of weeks to a month away.
Okay. But if you go to mobile.paypal.com today, there is a mobile site there.
Yeah, so it's a matter of auto redirecting, and that is occurring as we speak. Actually,
that will be good for the
future.
Well
done, Graham. There's your wish list.
Yeah, I take your point. Because we are actually, if you surf the internet on your mobile phone and you come to a store or a website that isn't optimized for a mobile phone at the moment, and you find your way through to an item you want and click on Pay with PayPal, at that point, you will be served a mobile PayPal process.
Oh, okay, but it's because I went straight to PayPal, I didn't get that.
Because you went to the PayPal site, you unfortunately get an unfriendly version for the mobile, which I'm aware of and working to get that changed.
But I do applaud the fact that you're using an actual mobile-optimized website instead of...
Makes it easy to use, doesn't it?
And the other thing is a lot of organizations are designing apps, that specific apps, for jobs that could just as easily be done with a mobile-optimized website.
Mm.
And,
right.
And they're tying it down to just one device. So it'll only work on the iPhone and it won't work on the Android phone.
I think we're in a process of change there at the moment. I think the apps work well if you've got a very, I guess, curated experience and you know exactly what you want to give. But I think the mobile...
There's not many jobs that can't be done with a website, though, these days.
That's right. Although it does, as you said before, it needs to be optimized for mobile.
That's right.
You've got such a small screen to deal with. You need to navigate people through using that small screen so the prints isn't too small and all the usual problems that you have.
But some thoughtful and creative web design can achieve that.
Yeah, absolutely, that's right. And HTML5 is designed for that friendliness now for better experiences on the mobile web as well. So I think we're just in a little it is still early days. You've got to remember that it was only 2 years ago the idea of purchasing from your phone was still fairly, you know, remote, far-fetched. Now it's become an everyday activity.
I think it's going to be exciting. The parking meter, you know, all those small things where you, like in Melbourne, they're putting loops underneath the road here, which you have to pay. I don't know how it's going to work, but they're talking about all this fandangle technology. And I just think this is a perfect application for mobile payment systems where you don't have the cash or you don't have the small.
And it's going to do the same thing. It's going to do the same thing in real life that PayPal did for us in the online world, in that if we come to someone that we wouldn't really trust with our credit card, you know, it might be someone selling apples on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And we can do it using PayPal and we don't have to reveal our details to them.
Oh, that's what I love about it. I think that's the thing.
And there's also, as I mentioned before, too, the ways you can use your phone. We've worked with Greater Union Cinemas, and you can do the whole experience on your mobile phone now, as far as go to their mobile website, look at some trailers, choose the movie you want to go to, the time you want to, pick your seat, pay for it, and you also get the ticket sent to your mobile phone as well, which you can just flash straight at the front of the queue. So the whole thing is a mobile experience.
Fantastic. Is it like a QR code type sort of ticket, or is it something else that they scan on the way in? That'd be, because the QR codes, they've been underutilized, haven't they?
QR codes have taken a while to take off here. It's getting slow growth. We did another promotion with Moshtix and EMI, who had an artist in town called Tiny Temper, and they put the QR code nice and big on his poster, and you could then point your phone at the QR code, which took you straight through to Moshtix, and you could buy your ticket for the show. And again, you got your ticket sent to your phone, which was a barcode as well, and you got that flashed as you walked into the gig.
It's I've just noticed here in Melbourne, QR codes are really big on real estate signs at the moment. So as you go past, you zap your phone on it, and you go straight to the web page on their catalogue or whatever it is for the house. So, you know, it's starting. It is starting.
It is starting, exactly right. It's just taken a while for that groundswell to get there, but it makes things easy. You don't have to put in any, punch in any URL codes or anything. You go straight to the page you're after.
Yeah, it's so inconvenient to type things on the mobile phone, isn't it?
Well, it is, you know. If you've got sort of chubby little fingers or anything, it can, you put in the wrong digit.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, crystal ball time. I love asking this question to people who know these answers. Well, hopefully know these answers. 5 years' time, what's going to be in your wallet? Assuming you've still got an income and we're still getting cash coming, what are you going to have in your wallet? Obviously, the plastic's still going to be there. Cash is going to be a minimum. But what else are we going to see? I don't know. What are we going to see in our wallets?
Well, I'd argue you wouldn't need a wallet in 5 years' time.
That's a good – yeah, you're probably right.
Your phone will do
phone
it
will
all.
Be the wallet.
In 5 years' time...
Just don't drop it.
Certainly don't drop it in the water. Potentially your phone will not only just deal with all your, loose change type items, you won't need any cash, you won't need it as a credit card anymore because it'll be built in your phone. As I mentioned before too, you could probably that device to start your car will be in your phone as well. So your keys, your wallet, everything will be in your phone. So... I reckon it's probably the only item you'll need to carry with you in that sense.
It's fun times ahead, really. It's very exciting in a lot of respects.
It is. It's really fascinating times. And the good thing, it's not science fiction. It's right now, and it's for everyone to use, from kids to grandparents as well. Which is, it's not hard to use, I guess.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us on Tech Talk tonight. It's been most enlightening.
Absolute pleasure.
And I quite look forward to what it's going to do in the next few years and change us all, because there's just so many different options, a lot of scope, and I guess things will become a little bit more secure, fingers crossed, between us and merchants and things like that through companies such as yours, because let's face it, that's why I've been using PayPal online religiously, because I don't have to give them the good numbers. It's just an email address and a password. It's fantastic.
Oh, thanks a lot, Andrew.
No worries. Thanks, Paul. We'll talk soon. See ya.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Adobe.
Yeah, it's a feature, but it's a feature that has an unintended consequence.
No.
Don't do that now.
I can't do 70 meg right now.
Do you use MobileMe?
No.
Yeah, for the promo, what sound would that
sort of like
sound?
Like that sort of a noise.
Really?
Well, that's a fair question.
It is a fair question.
It won't go in the promo. I was quite confident of that.
Kids thought it was great too.
They are.
They're big, they make a lot of noise, and they smell.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening
to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb.
That was good hearing from Paul all about the PayPal's plans.
Yes.
It's exciting times what's going to happen to our back pockets in the not-too-distant future.
I learned something. The Nexus S is going to have the near-field communications technology in it.
You've been watching all those people chatting away there in our chat.
There you go. And that's what Paul told us as well.
Oh, yeah. It's exciting times. The Bank of Apple, I think, is going to kick in shortly. So you'll be able to get a home loan off Apple, get your iPod, get your iPad, and get a home loan at the same time, because they've already got all the data. And if they bring out this NFC, the near-field communications, in their new fandangle gadgets.
So you reckon the next generation won't have to deal with whether to go with Westpac or Commonwealth or NAB. They'll just have to choose between PayPal and Apple.
Yeah, it could well be.
Mm.
Could well be. It might take a while, but it could get to that, because PayPal has all the deals with all the other banks and all the other, you know, they've got the relationships already in place. Apple has its own level of, you know, database ready to rock. They all have our usernames, passwords, and, you know, Apple gift cards.
Now, who owns PayPal? eBay own PayPal, or PayPal own eBay, or something like that?
One of the two.
I think eBay owns PayPal.
Who owns eBay?
Google?
No.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. Because PayPal and Google are going head-to-head in the courts at the moment over the technology surrounding some of this stuff.
Who owns eBay? Oops. Someone does.
eBay, I think, owns eBay. Someone will tell us.
Really? They're not.
The people in our chat are good like
unaffiliated, are they?
Dr. Ron's tapping away as he speaks, as he types?
Yeah, no. eBay owns PayPal.
Yeah. Yep.
They did bought that a while back, but no one owns eBay. eBay owns eBay, as far as I know.
Yeah. eBay owns eBay. That's what I thought, too. All right. Some other news.
Publicly listed company.
I'm just wondering if one of the other players is going to be interested in sort of dipping a toe in whether Apple will want to consolidate their a relationship somehow with PayPal, or whether Microsoft will want to do it as a way of combating Apple's financial
who knows
aspirations.
Wouldn't it be great if you could walk into a bank in a few years' time and you're trying to negotiate rates for your home loan? You walk into the Commonwealth and they say, "We'll do this." And you go, "Yeah, but PayPal will do this, and Apple will do this for me.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?" And I go, "What? Oh, PayPal? Apple? Yeah, I'm going to get my home loan with them. Come on, Commonwealth, lift."
Yeah.
I can see it happening.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
It would be a good day.
That's right. 5 years' time. Who knows what we'll do. All right, everyone, open up a web browser close to you. This is our task for the evening. And go to google.com.
Google.com of choice.
Google.com of choice. Now, say, for example, you want to fly like I did from Melbourne to Sydney, but you can reverse these.
Yeah.
Type in the word flight, F-L-I-G-H-T.
I win.
And then type Sydney. Mm-hmm. To Melbourne.
Yes. Done. Enter.
Enter.
Go. I'm fastest.
Okay. Now, have you noticed this new facility that Google are offering at the top of the thing? Flights from Sydney to Melbourne, SYD to MEL. There's on average 50 to 75 per day. The flight time's an hour, 31. And there's a whole heap of URLs there that you can click of the airlines that are doing that. But wait. See the very bottom one? It says scheduled of nonstop flights. Click the plus sign. And there are all the flights and all the different people of all the airlines that have flights on that particular day. Very nice, Google. Well done.
Yeah.
I'm feeling left out here.
That's kind of cool.
Oh, no, not. There is. It's third down.
Do you need to borrow my eye device?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Under any circumstances, need to borrow an eye device. No, I found it now. It's all right. I just had my...
Caught up with this?
Yeah, sorry.
Isn't that snazzy?
Google's... Just spell it for me. Hang on.
G-O-O.
Don't worry.
G-O-G-G-O.
IE6 says it can't open.
I had trouble spelling Melbourne. Sorry.
I did. I had Maborn or something.
Did you?
Who had no trouble, Andrew?
Yeah. I had no problem over here because I was doing it the same thing. Anyway, as you can sort of see there, Google now supports flight information. Now, it's in Australia and it's in beta too, by the way. I don't know where the country of beta is. If someone knows where it is, let me know. But it's in Australia. It's in the US. And I don't know whether it might be anywhere else. But what it does, great if you're a frequent traveler or even if you just want to know what time of the day the flights go. And the Sydney to Melbourne flights, well, you can scroll down the page. It's got...
That's pretty cool, actually.
It is very cool. So you can sort of see what's available. And it works internationally. So you can type in Sydney to Los Angeles or wherever you might happen to go. So if you're a frequent traveler... There's a new gadget for you to play with. You heard it here on Tech Talk Radio. Isn't it cool?
Nice. No, it doesn't work on IE6 either.
Of course
I just tried it.
Oh, dear.
That's That's very cool.
Try Firefox or, you know, any
I did.
Other
I watched, watched Better
browser.
Thing in Chrome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
well, that's what I tried at first, and then I opened up my...
Works great on the iPad.
My virtual machine with IE6 in it.
Okay. Good. Okay, we spoke last week briefly about rumors for Microsoft's new Phone 7 operating system. Allegedly, it's going to have multitasking in it, of which Lena made some comment about multitasking. Anyway, it's now been confirmed. All right. So, yay. Windows 7.5 will have multitasking. No. Oh. No, I didn't say cut and paste. I said multitasking.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which means you can check your flights and book them at the same time.
Well, surely copy-paste is to do with multitasking, isn't it? Like something happening over the top of something else?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. It might have cut and paste.
Wouldn't it?
But it's not... Cutting and pasting is not multitasking.
No.
Oh, okay.
Because you can actually, you know, change application with a bit of something in your clipboard. That's not multitasking.
And the you can cut something from one application, paste into another. The first application, once you switch to the second application, the first application isn't still active in the background. That's the...
Yeah.
Multitasking means that the second application can keep running in the background, so it can keep, you know, checking for something or waiting for an alert or something like that.
Mm. All right. Telstra. Let's talk about the phone company now. Telstra Mobile Broadband. We've all got it. Well, I don't know. I can't speak. Maybe not all got it. I've got it.
I've got it.
Have
I've
you?
Got
it.
I don't
have you had, got it twice. Have you had bill shock with Telstra? Have you ever exceeded the cap of your data?
Oh, not
did
enough
you,
data.
Did you have to go to Apple and ask for a personal loan? to pay for your bill shock
or PayPal. I didn't make too many phone calls.
Or PayPal. No, they're not into it yet. No, you don't get, yes. Anyway, Telstra, during the course of the week, made us all stop and do a double take and go, really? This isn't April Fool's Day or anything like that, is it? No, it wasn't. Anyway, Adam's View from the Couch this week tells us all about what they're up to.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
Rapture might be late, but Telstra abandoning NextG's hefty excess data charges is surely a sign of the coming apocalypse. By the end of the year, Telstra will start shaping mobile data connections when you reach your postpaid monthly allowance, rather than charging you up to 25 cents per meg for excess usage. You'll be throttled back to dial-up speed for the rest of the month, or you can recharge your account to return to full speed. This all sounds surprisingly civilised coming from Telstra, the telco that's made an art form of screwing its customers for every cent it can get. Bill shock is Telstra's bread and butter and has been for years. Even when Telstra is at fault, the call centre's first option is generally to offer to halve your bill rather than admit fault. I once had Telstra offer to halve a $600 excess data charge to $300 when Telstra was clearly at fault. A few choice expletives soon had a supervisor on the line and the problem resolved in my favour. Now, we don't yet have any exact details on how this new Telstra shaping scheme will work, and I'll be reading the fine print very carefully. As with all telcos these days, the devil is in the detail. Now, according to Telstra Chief Financial Officer John Stanhope, our customers deserve to be able to enjoy the full capabilities of their Telstra postpaid mobiles without fear of a large, unexpected bill. This is pure comedy gold in the eyes of anyone who's been a NextG customer from the early days. Stanhope is also promising to improve Telstra's mobile data usage monitoring, so you've got a better idea of how much you've actually used. Now, Telstra's usage monitoring has improved from horrendous to just plain terrible in recent years, so let's hope it keeps getting better. So why do I stick with Telstra? Because at least the network works as advertised. I'd rather be stuck with a half-baked billing system than a half-baked wireless network as some of the competitors offer. Now, I always said hell would freeze over before Telstra stopped screwing customers with excess mobile data fees. Of course, Rapture failed to materialise the other weekend, and Judgment Day has apparently been rescheduled for October 21. Be sure to mark it in your calendar. It will be very interesting to see what comes first. Telstra treating customers with respect or the end of the world.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
October 21, hey? End of the... Yeah. That's my father-in-law's birthday. That could happen. Oh, that'll get back. Hi, Bob. Anyway, yes.
The whole rapture thing was supposed to be, you know, everybody ascends into heaven. That was the other day.
Was it?
And then from that point until the 21st of October was when there's supposed to be plagues, floods,
locusts?
Pestilence for all the locusts.
All the rest of us, yeah.
For the rest of us that are remaining.
What about mice?
The 21st of October is when the world will end. Yeah, no, the mice are all controlling us.
There's another bit of very funny radio I was listening to
cleverly
today.
Cleverly designed laboratory experiments.
You know we've got a mice plague here in Victoria and South Australia?
Yeah,
I heard about
that. They're in
their billions at the moment. And I was listening to someone who was saying the biggest problem with the mice is they get into the photocopier. And when you hit the photocopier, the wheels squash them and you get blood on
your piece
of paper. Mm.
Not nice at all.
I hadn't really thought about that.
Of course, the mice are going to head in there because it's nice and warm, you see.
That's right.
Sense. Yeah.
They head into the warmth and they just curl up on the photocopier and then someone hits the big green button and you get more than your buck and fall on your piece of paper coming out the other side. I don't know how we get to these sort of things.
We've completely missed the point of the Telstra data shape.
Yeah, we have, haven't we? I digress.
The upshot of the Telstra data cap thing is just double check your photocopier if there's...
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Read the fine print, except if you're with Vodafone, then just check with the ACCC first.
Mm.
There might be some incredibly strange loophole, as they tend to do these days.
Well, no, but I think it's an improvement, and I think it's indicative of the current attitude with Telstra. They are
getting more
consumer-friendly. Yeah. They are winning back a lot of customers that left, tried the opposition, and are now coming back.
You're listening to this, Lena?
Yes,
it's,
I am.
For those who are still in contract... No.
I know.
they've always had by far and away the best network, and they've always had by far and away the highest prices and the worst conditions and the most difficult to get along with in every other manner. And I think they are working hard now to correct some of that, and some of their plans are very competitive now.
They are incredibly competitive. My wife, for example, is on a $349 plan, and by the time you add a little bit of internet, that takes up to about $59.
Yeah.
And you get a cruddy network with SMSs that don't work in the living room and excess data usage and stuff.
Is your wife a big user of the phone? Does she make lots of phone calls?
Now that she has an iPhone, the GPS/internet stuff is kicking in big time. We'll exceed the cap there. And SMS as well. Let's just say her fingers do the walking in most times. And on the average occasion, I think the $49 gives you $350 worth of calls on three.
Mm-hmm.
And she exceeds that nearly every other month.
So what do you get for 50-odd bucks a month on Telstra?
And if you move over to Telstra, which is not with a handset, that is a 12-month contract with paying the same $59, instead of $350 worth of calls and I think about a gig of bandwidth or whatever you get on three, you get $800 worth of calls on Telstra.
Are they the same dollars? Are the calls?
No, they're a little different, but still, the little difference is nothing compared to the $350. Like it's
we need to start getting these plans expressed in minutes of airtime instead of dollars.
We do. And then the other thing is you get unlimited SMSs because that costs them nothing. And you get 2 gigs, so you get double the amount of bandwidth. Mm. And let's face it, we're starting to use all of our internet-based services on the go.
Oh, yes.
As we're sort of alluding to with Paul there, we're becoming a mobile country. And I just think this is where companies such as Optus, Vodafone and Three have just missed the boat big time. And they're losing customers speculatively losing customers hand over fist because to Telstra, who have actually, like normal, they've cottoned onto it. But in this time around, they're charging a reasonable price.
Yeah.
And the bill shock thing doesn't kick in until December, by the way.
But it is something to look forward to.
if you're that way inclined, yes.
Under the tree.
Yes. If you're watching your megabytes. You don't want to get stung as you go over the limit. Mm. So,
I mean, it's not that long ago that they upped all their data plans with it. So they doubled a lot of the data capacity or added extra gigabytes to the same plans. And that worked really well for me. One of mine went up from 1 gig to 3 gig or something like that. It was fantastic. So,
but the other great thing about it is 12 months isn't a huge contract to sign your life away to a telco. And this is a handset-free, bring-your-own-handset type sort of device, which is pretty good because your technology is not going to change that much in 12 months. Your data usage, unless you're a real, internet junkie, is not going to change that month over the next little bit.
You get 2 years out of a handset these days, don't you?
You do, but just go and buy your handset and update it or plug it into something else.
Oh, here we go. Freedom Connect BYO plans.
That's them.
$49 plan, $550 unlimited text.
Yeah.
And 1.5 gig for $49?
The same price. Go the $59 plan. Extra $10 and it's worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, I'm just looking at... Yeah. Still and the unlimited call text, a lot more calls and 2 gig of data, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For an extra $10. It's basically double what 3 give you for the same price. That's not bad value. And you're signing up for 2 years. So we don't work for Telstra or anything like that. It's just a good value for money. Well worth it. Hey, let's definitely talk about other things because we've got so much to get through.
Oh, look at the $99 plan.
Oh, dear. Data breach. Did you hear about the 8,000 CBA credit card holders that were exposed and they had to reassign all the cards during the course of the week?
Yes. What happened there? Commonwealth Bank?
Commonwealth Bank. Ooh.
Yes. Anyway, they sent a notice about fraudulent transactions over its network and alerted card issues, Visa and MasterCard in particular, that there are a couple of anomalies. And as a result, your card was cancelled pretty much instantly, and they were going to reissue. Too bad for about your direct debits and things like that. The bank did not release...
Oh, better than getting a bill for lots of things you didn't buy.
No. Anyway, apparently it was a merchant, and the bank did not release the name of the affected merchant and its acquiring bank or when the breach occurred. So if you got your card cancelled, chances are you shopped with them, is where I'd say. Mm. So you could backtrack from that and work it out. So anyway, customer cards reissued as a matter of priority due to a...
So at least they are doing it. At least they are taking necessary steps.
Correct. The National Broadband Network, they're looking for partners or ISPs, or expression of interest from ISPs, wanting to offer broadband products on the...
Sorry.
That was Graham.
I thought that was Dr. Ron's doing a bit of chest thumping.
He stabs people when they bang microphones.
It was Dr. Ron's phone fell down. He booby trapped it. When I moved the rundown, his phone fell out.
It had to be my fault somehow.
It definitely was your fault. No question about that.
Sorry, where was I? Oh, yes, the NBN Co. is looking for some partners in ISPs to put some stuff up on their new satellite, which will entice customers.
Okay.
The national network provider said it had signed Harbour IT and SkyMesh to test the interim service with up to 200 rural and remote customers between now and July. The test customers were primarily existing Australian Broadband Guarantee service users. So it's there. They're going to start testing it very shortly. Satellite delivery of NBN for the rest of the country, that other 5% that can't quite get hold of a bit of fibre, it can't be too bad, I wouldn't have thought.
Oh, it's got to be better than what they have now.
Which is satellite, isn't it?
No,
it's
a couple of bits of galvanised fence wire twisted together. That's what they've got now. They're trying to push ADSL over...
Two cans and a bit of string.
Yeah, local loops that are 180 kilometres long.
Okay, cool. Very good. Intel might start making chips based on non-Intel cores.
Ooh.
Did you hear this?
No.
Intel would consider making chips for rivals, but any proposal to use its advanced manufacturing technology to make processor-based on a competitive architecture would trigger an in-depth discussion.
New company called AMDimtel.
Yeah. Or the A5 chips for Mac, maybe, for their mobile devices. Anyway, according to the Chief Financial Officer, Stacey Smith, she said there are certain customers that would be interesting to us and certain customers that wouldn't. So we'll have the Intel divide, the haves and the have-nots. In other gossip, what's tickling your fancy over there,
Dr.
Graham?
What they're saying without quite saying it.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Yeah. Yes, PR departments are really good like that.
Yes, you can go away if your name's...
Skype has been forced to disable third-party update pushed out to users late last week after it sparked fears of a popular voice-over IP service was propagating a worm.
Yeah, the whole Skype network disappeared for a couple of days.
Did you notice it? I didn't think you used Skype anymore.
I don't, and I didn't.
No.
A lot of people did, though.
Users took to Skype forums after being prompted by the voiceover IP service to allow an executable file for EasyBits games go to run on their machines, whatever that means. Several users reported that when they denied permission for the file to install, it overrode their permissions.
Oh. Several users being about 85 million users around the world or something.
Yeah.
They said a small number of people were affected in their blog.
Small number. Well, on a percentage of
the whole world.
Probably 1% of their user base would be considerable, I would imagine.
Indeed. Small by comparison, I suppose.
So if you've updated... Who was that?
Graham. Again.
Graham's going to have to sit in the naughty corner.
I think that's a slab for all of us tonight.
it is a slab. They told people to delete a solitary XML file, and that would fix the problem.
Really?
You'd be able to log back onto Skype then.
Okay, good. How did it get into their system in the first place?
Well, it got pushed out in an update, but it was compromised, I think.
Okay. And Samsung's lawyers are demanding to see the iPhone 5 and iPad 3. Here we go.
They can demand all they like. I know what I'd be saying if I was Apple.
They've got civil things happening in US courts at the moment, and yes, the things that you just did in the studio.
Those finger gestures.
Everybody would know. I cannot repeat on the radio. Just imagine what Dr. Ron just did. Mm. Anyway, they've got a bit of an issue over some patent breaches and stuff like that. And this is just going to be ongoing with Samsung and Nokia and Apple and Microsoft and just name the top 10 companies in the, you know.
When are they just going to make out already?
Well, I don't know.
Stop pretending you hate each other. We all know it's not true.
Really?
They always bash up the kid they like at school.
Okay. Mm. Is that how it works?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's your turn now.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
I'm talking parental controls tonight.
Over
on
what?
On your consoles.
Oh, computer games.
Yeah, for your games.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about other sort of parental controls. What's happening? Is this where you can go into your PlayStation and say,
don't let the kids go on YouTube? That kind of thing.
Ah, handy. Mm. You can do that on your iGadget too, I've noticed.
You can.
You're on your television too.
You can do it in a lot of places, which is good. It's very good, considering you can't run
the rating
system.
Doesn't work in the cinemas though.
No.
Have you noticed?
On your Xbox... I'll start with the Xbox 360.
I don't have an Xbox.
You should.
It's the only one I don't have.
Yeah, well, there you go. You got to get the Triforce.
Don't want all three of them?
The trifecta.
Oh.
You have to. You're halfway there. You can control on the Xbox which games can be played.
Maths wasn't a strength.
Which movies... Shut up. Which movies and TV shows can be watched. How long each family member can use the console, daily or weekly, like a family timer. And whether or not someone can jump online and play on Xbox Live, which is something a lot of parents don't want their kids doing. And if you've ever spent more than 10 minutes on Xbox Live, you know why. there's a lot of people on headsets saying questionable things about your mother.
Really? That's why I don't have one.
Like How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
There's a television show, isn't it?
Yeah, they're talking about television shows.
Yes. And other things.
So you can limit by time the how long someone spends on
You can.
Xbox. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I really like that part about it.
So you can say, young fella, you've got half an hour and then it's homework time or bedtime.
Yep. So what, as an example, the family timer allows you to set it so it's only usable during a certain period of time in the day or the week or wherever. You could say you can only play Xbox 2 hours after you come home from school and your homework is done first.
Ah.
So you can sort of do it as a, you know, comes on at 5 o'clock for an hour and a half. Just before you get dinner.
That's
that
good.
Sort of thing. Yeah.
So how does the Xbox know if the homework's been done?
It doesn't. The parent does. Okay. Yeah. That's the thing with all the parental controls. They aren't close to proper parental supervision.
The parental control has a PIN number, which can then overwrite when on evidence given in the kitchen that homework has been done.
Yes.
Then parental override patch number 1234 can
that.
Be
yep.
implemented and they can play more.
Yeah. So if you want to set up parental controls on your Xbox, go to your console, go to My Xbox, then select Family Center or Family Settings. That depends on what subscription you've got, whatever thing comes up. Under Console Safety, select On, and then you get to put in your 4-digit passcode. And you can set that up as your little parental.
And don't let the kids get to there before you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, they'll have the PIN number and you won't.
Yep. Then press save and exit.
That'd never happen.
No, not in our switched-on tech-savvy teen world, would it?
No,
never.
And don't let your kids know that there's Google ways around this. But then click save and exit. Once console safety is turned on, then you can go in and explore all the individual settings like the ratings and content, so they can only play things that are rated PG or G or whatever you choose, and the family timer. And you can also turn off Xbox Live. More information on that is at support.xbox.com.
But, Lena,
yeah.
In Australia, we live in a police state where adults aren't allowed to play games. All games have to be children's games.
That's right.
So what's the point?
Well, some children can play MA15 games and some children can't. Or some parents don't want their kids playing Dead Space.
Right. That's fair enough. So what about the other consoles, Lena? What about the Wii? What about the PS3?
The Wii had some pretty complex things. I couldn't actually figure it out.
You should have got your children involved. They would have said.
Should have given it to my 3-year-old.
What about your husband? He's a tech guru, isn't he?
It's easy, Mum. You just do this. Bang, 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 bang. There you go.
Just get in local primary school. There'll be a 10-year-old to be able to help you in a flash.
From what I could tell, the Wii has things set up per profile, which is something that the other consoles didn't really seem to have, which I kind of liked about that. So you could, if you've got an older child and a younger child, have two separate settings for the two of them. I'm pretty sure. I'm not 100%. I've got to get back to you on the Wii. But I've got the PlayStation 3 directions. In settings, there's a little briefcase icon. Go to security settings. And then you put in a four-character password, very similar to the Xbox. You can set the PS3 to not allow certain games, DVDs, or Blu-rays over a certain classification rating. You can set it to not allow web browsing.
That's handy. That'll be very handy for those teenagers. I mean, those young girls that think they're teenagers and young boys that think they're teenagers.
And they find an M-rated DVD or something.
The MA 15 plus, which has got, you know, no holes barred, violence and stuff like that in there.
Mm.
The thing that I find is very frustrating is that the big kids put on the videos that the little kids shouldn't watch.
Yep.
And there's no amount of parental guidance can fix that apart from being in the room with them.
Exactly, yeah. None of this is a substitute for actually, you know, watching your children.
No.
Oh, so you still have to be a parent.
You do, yeah, believe it or not. If you don't want to be, don't have kids.
But take YouTube off your iGadgets. That's a good start.
Yeah, I'll get to the iOS as well.
They like searching for kitty cats and stuff like that, and you get the most bizarre things.
Yeah, there is some odd things on the YouTube.
Have we covered PS3s?
Yes.
Did we? Where was I? Well, didn't you talk about
not paying attention?
No, obviously not.
No, you can. I'm doing it right now. You can also turn off web browsing.
Tricked me.
But you can either have web browsing on or web browsing off. And if you want to have certain websites allowed and certain websites not, you have to use a web filtering service, which incurs its own separate fees.
Really?
Yeah, which is a bit disappointing.
What's wrong with the router in the living room?
Yeah.
See, you've got to don't think of it just as a gadget that's plugged into your network. Think of your gateway, that is the router which connects your whole house to the internet.
You can use that to implement the controls,
Yeah, and you can use that to...
It gives you a bit more flexibility.
Although,
that way,
I've yet to see a system for controlling internet access that's really actually useful.
Yes. I do actually have a new router, which I won't name brands because we're not plugging anybody. But right. I did actually... This router lets you...
But its initials are billion?
No.
No?
This this router actually lets you allocate access based on the MAC address of a device, which is a universal device. So when they come home, little Johnny has the iPhone, the iPad, the iGadget.
Yeah.
You know the MAC address of the device. You can say, no, Johnny, no internet between this hour and this hour.
That's good.
And... what that means is you can then block the internet between sleeping times so they can't do texting under the covers or browsing those naughty sites under the covers. You can block those. And that's where the MAC address is going to become very, very handy because every device has its own unique MAC address.
Yeah, that's what Andrew's talking about. Address MAC spoofing? Has got nothing to do with Apple Mac. It's the hardware address of a particular device that works on a network.
That's
it stands
right.
for Media Access Control, I think.
Yes. And that's really good because if you give the kids computers, you can then say, nah, or any device that connects to the internet, you can say yes or no and base it on the time you can do it. And that's done in the router. So there's great stuff out there.
So if they've got a smartphone, you can say, no, you can't access the internet from your smartphone.
That's right.
Between these hours or at all, for that matter.
You have to go next door and hack your neighbor's Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
You can also disable them. You can also disable them accessing the PlayStation network, but you don't really have to worry about that at the moment.
What's that?
you can disable chat usage, and you can also set the amount of money in the wallet that you can designate to sub-accounts, which is accounts used by minors.
Graham bought a PS3 today.
He did. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you going to come and play GT5 with us one day soon when PlayStation Network gets its act together?
When I've learned how to drive, yes.
Yeah, good. Your practice.
Yeah, I'm currently hitting the wall at high speed very frequently.
Oh, that's how I drive. That's fine.
That's what you do.
love L.A. Noir. I arrive to all my destinations sideways.
Oh, cool.
Oh, really?
In my police car, yep.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I saw that there was a section in there for drifting practice. I must learn that.
On your iOS devices as well, if your child has access to your iPad, your iPhone, or if they have their own iPod Touch, which a lot of kids do, a lot of very lucky, spoiled children.
Mrs. Dr. Ron's got an iPod Touch.
Settle.
Well, then she's a lucky, spoiled child, isn't she?
My eldest has got an iPod Touch.
It's under Settings, General, and then under Restrictions. You can turn on and off Safari, YouTube, the camera, FaceTime, iTunes, Ping, whatever that is, installing apps, deleting apps.
She's
and
a penguin.
In-app
She's a
purchases.
Mac user, you can tell, can't you? Whatever ping is. There's Traceroute. There's
No, it's the penguin
ping.
Thing.
It's in it? iTunes. It's a
oh, the music sharing that stuff. Stupid that thing. Stupid thing.
Yeah, I don't like it. You can also allow content according to rating, which is such as not allowing them to access explicit podcasts or, you know, things that are rated. That's Apple's rating system, though, so you have to look that up to see what you're comfortable with.
Is our podcast rated explicit after Adam's outburst last week?
No.
I don't know. I thought you cut that out.
No. Something about your armpit, it was.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Yeah, I misheard.
They have nothing against armpits. You can
a
also
lot of stroking went on
disallow. You can also disallow multiplayer games on the Game Center along with adding and de-adding friends.
You'll have to listen to last week's podcast, so won't you?
There's lots of...
thank you, Lena.
Just ignore them, Lena. Just keep plow on.
You can do lots of things to stop your kids getting into things they shouldn't. Yeah.
That's good.
But none of it is a substitute to actually watching them and being behind them when they're playing games or using the internet.
Have you blogged about this stuff?
No, but
should.
I will.
Get blogging.
Get blogging.
Because people will want to look up the instructions on, you know, how to do it for the various things that you were read out. Just
I'll do it step by step.
Yep.
Yeah, I should do a post about that. I will. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad we sorted that out.
Grassislena.com is
Indeed.
Lena's blog.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It hasn't been there much for a while, but there will be soon.
Have you had other things to do?
I have, like staying alive.
Yes. Mm. You need earth experience combined with the selling of houses.
Yes.
And we did that really well. Timing's everything, isn't it?
Launching a few massive games as well.
Oh,
look,
amazing.
Yep.
Then getting pneumonia.
Yeah, pneumonia.
That's another word, a P word.
Penultimate pneumonia. Yeah.
Oh, dear. How many eps does that go back? Anyway, in other, thank you for your computer information.
That's
gaming
all right.
The thingy tonight, because I must admit, this show has always lacked a little bit of gaming, and you've brought it to us now.
Thank
so
you, thank you. If anyone has anything they want me to talk about, email in and tell us. If you've got any questions about your
gaming.
Yeah,
there's a big fan base out there. I'm sure they'll email in. But you can do that.
feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Yes. Yes. There's some funny things going on with email today. But anyway,
what, our email or email generally?
All email that I came to the conclusion was someone did something somewhere and it didn't work for a while. Have you ever been, well, you can send email, but you can't receive it? It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
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 I have customers ringing up getting me to fix things like that.
I had to log into a US-based ISP and forward it to a Gmail account so that I can see the email.
Oh, no.
Anyway. Don't know what happened there, but now you've heard of all these camera cars. This is the last one before we go to Oddspot website gadget of the week. Okay. Anything else will be carried over to next week if I don't lose a piece of paper.
Are you talking about Google camera cars?
Yeah, Google camera cars.
Oh,
I've
heard
about them.
Yeah, they go around and they take photos. It's called Street View if you hadn't been under a rock somewhere for many years. You probably wouldn't have seen an IE6 though.
No.
Or in Germany.
Or in Germany.
Or in Germany, yes. You would have been pixelated or blurred and had eggs thrown against your door.
Or had your dummy spat and just gone home, yeah.
Yeah. Those Germans, they don't like being on Street View.
They take it very seriously.
The Germans.
Well, the Germans have something else to worry about now. It's called TomTom.
Uh-oh.
TomTom have camera cars doing the rounds of Europe as we speak.
Rot-roll.
So what does that mean for us all? Does that mean
the same vein as the Google Street View cars?
Oh, look, there you go. This is great for radio. There is a picture of said TomTom camera car doing the rounds in Europe somewhere.
Cool. They're not as cute as the Google cars, are they? That's
no,
a van.
They're green with TomTom on it.
Yeah.
The, and little cameras and GPS receivers and stuff on it.
The Mini Cooper or a Golf or something cool, wasn't it?
Oh, it varied. When I was at Google last year, they had several of them out the front of the Google Plex.
All charging.
No, they were just sitting in a car park with other cars. Like... You drive through the car park. Oh, there's one of those cars. Mm. There were several of them parked there. So,
now what this means, Andrew, is that places like Germany and like certain towns in the UK that decided they didn't like the Google cars and things like that, they're going to have to decide whether their prejudice is specific against Google or whether they're going to ban photography in public places. And that's really the choice it's going to come down to.
That's a very good point, really, isn't it?
Because
TomTom
really,
coming. Here we come.
Yeah. Yep. It's now become someone else who's not Google is doing what Google was doing. So are they going to let TomTom do it and not Google? Are they going to let Google, single Google out as being particularly evil? Or are they going to say that, systematic taking of photographs in public places? Or how are they going to differentiate between the ability of ordinary anybody to take a photograph in a public place...
Don't forget about the cameras that are up there, says he, pointing up. The satellites.
You can't get to them.
No, you can't get to them. You can't spray ink on them as they fly past or anything like that. You can see them on the odd occasion.
Just a tad too high, yeah.
But they do take photos, and they're fairly high res, and you can see things like people's backyards and people sunbaking.
We all carry cameras, and we all take photographs in public places. We all take photographs in the street.
Oh, absolutely. Go and have a look on Flickr.
So, you know, where do you draw the line?
Good question. Well, time will tell as TomTom traverse the... What are they going to do with them? I don't think, because TomTom are the makers of these in-car GPS devices,
navigation devices. Not just GPS, devices. But navigating devices, yeah. So you can put in the address of your destination and go there.
So it's going to show you a picture as you drive there. Yeah, oh, that's what you look for. Well, I guess
that'd
be good.
And I presume they'll be able to show you a photograph of an intersection so you can see which lane to get in or which offshoot to take at a complex intersection and things like that, I would imagine.
Doing 3D modelling and stuff.
That would be what I would imagine they'd use it for.
I wonder if services like Panoramio are banned in Germany now. They're the services where people can take their own private photographs in a public place.
And attach them to Google Maps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Upload it straight to Google Maps or Google Earth.
Is there a Google dot something? What I don't know what the two-letter or three-letter country code is for Germany. Is it GE or something like that?
Dot DE.
Yeah.
Oh, you just hit google.de and go through that way and I guess see what you can see. Probably the easiest way. Anyway, this is Tech Talk Radio. Last little bit for the evening coming up after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened during the course of the week.
This is a new experience, agreeing with
Senator
Conroy.
It's hard, isn't it? And
Julia.
The more they lock it down, the more people will work around it.
Is it?
I don't know.
You know something I don't know?
No, I don't.
I just tried to unlock Andrew's phone with my passcode.
If you're going to cross the road, look both ways.
Entertaining.
So no more pub runs.
No more pub runs.
Informative.
Look, I agree with you, Graham.
Independent.
I can feel a churn coming on.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I mentioned the word Optus, and I think you've thrown petrol over them.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
Well, this is exciting. The Netgear Storer 1TB home media network attached storage device lets you store, share and protect music, movies, photos and data using any device on your home network and over the internet. Listen to your music collection. The Storer 1TB offers media streaming to any universal plug and play.
It's only a terabyte.
Or DLNA device, Digital Living Network Alliance device on the network.
Handy.
Lets you share private photo albums with family and friends. You can drop photos into Facebook with ease because there's an automated uploader if you're into Facebook.
Only a terabyte though.
Yeah, but it's not
2 terabytes, it should be the day's things.
You can automatically back up from PCs and Macs in your home to eliminate data loss concerns.
Very handy.
It even supports a second hard drive that mirrors the first on the fly, ensuring even greater reliability for those irreplaceable digital assets.
There's your other terabyte. So it's a JBOD device.
No, because it's mirroring.
It's
so
mirroring.
Does it have to mirror? You can't do a JBOD?
No, it stays at 1 terabyte.
No, you can. This is one here.
That's the one, Graham. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it can do JBOD as well.
Oh, there you go.
JBOD, acronym for just a bunch of drives.
Just a bunch of drives. A look on eBay for a good price, but they're quite dear on eBay. I would suggest going to an online store like Harris Technologies, where you get it for about $220.
Really? Harris aren't traditionally cheap.
They're not, but I saw like buy it now prices on eBay for like $280 and $290. I thought, no, that's a bit expensive. That's our gadget, Andrew, the Netgear Storer 1TB network attached storage device.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
We're all Twitter users here, to varying extents.
We tweet.
Who unfollowed me, Andrew? Who.unfollowed.me is our website this week.
Okay.
Get you see what I did there?
Yeah,
that's tricky, isn't it?
Everyone looked at each other and go, guilty, Your Honour. Did we?
When someone starts following you on Twitter, you get an email notification and you feel a bit special. But do you ever wonder who's unfollowed you on Twitter?
No.
Wonder no more.
All the spammers.
Except Lena, who's never wondered that.
I don't know.
I've zipped Lena.
Who.unfollowed.me? No, I've zipped other people. I like the zip feature
really good,
in Tweetcaster. Who Unfollowed Me allows you to easily check unfollowers without waiting for an email or a direct message. What's more, you can go pro for just $4.99 a year, and that lets you automatically unfollow those not following back, so it's a near feature. There's a 45-day unfollower history, and of course, much, much more. That's our website, Andrew, who.unfollowed.me.
Tech Talk Radio App of the Week.
Logmaster is an electronic vehicle logbook for Android. If you run a vehicle for work, Logmaster lets you record trips and automatically pre-fills the last odometer reading as well as date and time. You can even have multiple vehicles if that's the way your business works.
You have to keep a log every 7 years, don't you?
You have to keep
a
log
tax office.
Well, it depends on how you do it. You keep a log for 3 months or 4 months and then multiply it, you know, extrapolate the data.
Yeah, look, that's the easiest way to do it.
Depends on the...
Just lie through your teeth for 3 months.
TikTok radio does not encourage a tax
lying
evasion.
I think I've got a bit confused. Logmaster portable band saw sawmills.
No. You're in the wrong place, Graham. I haven't given you a website yet. You've jumped the gun. The website you need to go to for information is www.10thdoor.com. It's 10th, 10thdoor.com. There's a free version and a pro version. I purchased the pro version today. Costs about $5, and it lets you email the logs out when it's tax time, or if you want to back up the log data, you can get them out of your device.
Well, that's very handy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good one. So if you need to keep an electronic log of your trips, that's our app of the week. Andrew, Logmaster.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf! You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Authorities investigating a bank robbery in Houston identified the culprits after they were found bragging about it on Facebook. Federal prosecutors said two former tellers at the International Bank of Commerce recruited a number of people to steal more than $62,000 on the 23rd of March. Four people have now been indicted on charges of bank robbery and embezzlement. Authorities say an anonymous tip led investigators to Facebook posts. In one, a defendant wrote, "I'm rich." Another post said, "Wipe my teeth with hundreds."
Yeah, it'll do it, won't it?
If you're going to rob a bank, don't brag about it on Facebook. But no. Don't rob a bank in the first place.
No. Unless you're in Victoria and they only have IE6. And I don't think you can use Facebook on IE6. No? Oh, it's YouTube you can't use on IE6, isn't it? So brag about it on YouTube, all right? You won't get caught in Victoria.
What, you're suggesting
people here,
that,
isn't
that
it
banks
silly?
And... Yes, state government won't be able to...
This means that the people who work for those organisations have to use their own web browser at home to see what you're up to.
Think outside the square.
Correct. That's it.
Don't rob banks.
We have to go, because we're running over. Goodbye.
How did that happen?
I don't know. Same time next week. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellist Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Guest panellist is Justin Dunlop. Expert opinion by Adam Turner and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and the world that rebroadcast the show. And a reminder that Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. And don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk chat, and solve your tech issues in the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.